Welcome to SILRAP Podcasts. You are about to listen to a service of the Center for International Law Research and Policy.
Thank you very much. I was asked to make some concluding reflections. Let me just say that I loved the organization of this conference, philosophers and then foundational concepts. And the conference started wonderfully with its introductory panel. And in this regard, Justice Locur's observations regarding the foundations of international criminal law found in the Ramayana and the Mahabharata, of which the Bhagavad Gita is a part. Let us not forget that the philosophy of Mahatma Gandhi, whose life and teachings seem to play such a large role in this conference, was influenced by the Gita. And as we were reminded in many ways, Gandhi echoed the conduct and philosophy of the great Indian Emperor Ashoka, who had created one of the largest empires in ancient India and then renounced it all to become a Buddhist monk. Along the way, he renounced violence and introduced a policy that established welfare as a right for all citizens. He promoted religious tolerance and core universal values, including respect for all life and the importance of spiritual awareness, some of the values that we've considered, the legal goods that we've considered in this conference. And we ended the conference with Surabhi Sharma's reflections on Indian thought on the collective goods protected by international criminal law. And this is a deep, rich, ancient, but still vital vein of thought. So we have been having these discussions in a particularly appropriate place here in India. I can't think of a better place, actually. And what are those discussions centered on? Well, here, let me highlight Morton's point during the introductory panel about the emergency response creation and growth of international criminal law. I refer to this in my recent book, Atrocity Speech Law, which looks at one area of law, the law governing the relationship between hate speech and international crimes, and points out that it was cobbled together, beginning at Nuremberg, in response to emergency circumstances. And then there was a cut and paste approach that was taken. And that cut and paste approach has been used throughout the history of international criminal law, I submit to you. And so I think we need a more holistic approach to international criminal law in general, and I support the idea of considering expanding its subject matter jurisdiction to include crimes against the environment, aggression, and perhaps terrorism, among other crimes. The point is that we've had a very special opportunity here. We've had the chance to step back and explore the foundations of international criminal law. Indeed, the philosophical foundations, in the kind of depth that is necessary for the international community to consider its essential qualities and potential problems. And it's great that we're sharing that in an open source book that will give the rest of the world the benefits of our deliberations. And we have engaged in a number of important philosophical inquiries. For example, what is the foundational legitimacy of international criminal law? And we've heard insights into this from philosophers throughout history, from Hobbes to Kant to de Waal to Arendt to Foucault. Some have found legitimacy and some have questioned it. We can perhaps see ICL through the lens of Machiavelli, a prince nakedly arrogating power to himself, or perhaps through the lens of a new interpretation of Foucault, where power is about security for vulnerable populations and is beneficent on a macro level. Or even through an updated view of Hobbes, where a new social contract might be negotiated among the community of nations. To those who have expressed a dim view of ICL, who see that it is not applied evenly or efficaciously, let me pose a question. Why does it have to be a zero-sum game? Why not acknowledge realpolitik and say, yes, we did what was politically feasible. That was what we could do. We admit that. Even if we did that consciously, and we did what we could for salutary purposes, we know that we're building for a better future when realpolitik may be less of an obstacle. We have a foundation here, so it is better to do what we are doing than doing nothing at all. And I think that's a reasonable narrative. And for many of those of us who work in this field, it allows us to see an importance in what we're doing. As for ICL being a new form of colonialism, another critique we've heard these past 2 days, I ask you to at least consider the Latin logical fallacy, post hoc ergo propter hoc. Because Africa has been the main focus to date does not necessarily mean that we are confronting a new kind of colonialism. ICL's space for operation is limited. We've seen that throughout this conference. Again, we are confronted with realpolitik and the phenomenon of self-referrals, as has been discussed. Perhaps there are unfortunate power plays behind the scenes, and that will be considered at the next SILRAP conference, as it should be. But let me say here that what is being done in ICL today may be crucial for future generations. I submit that the reflections of this conference have made that much clear. At the same time, we clearly need to improve ICL. That much has also been very clear. And so we've been asking ourselves other questions too. What are the aims of ICL? And here we began with Plato and a Platonic theory of punishment advising that we minimize emotional bias. And more modernly, we have explored utilitarianism through Bentham. We have looked at retributivism and expressivism as well. Are ICL's aims legitimate? Is its remit too broad? We've been asked to think of post-conflict justice more granularly, and perhaps in reference to certain norm violators, we need to be aware of other institutions, including non-punitive ones, that can contribute more effectively to the legal goods of unity and reconciliation that were highlighted in the last panel sessions. In the course of these 2 days, we have also considered issues of epistemology with reflections on Wittgenstein in relation to proving, among other things, dolus specialis. And we have heard about truth and testimony in relation to epistemic injustice in ICL. We have even considered the notion of normative pluralism and fragmentation in ICL. Here and at other junctures during the conference, we have studied Habermas and his theory of communicative rationality and the public sphere. And that reminds me that we have seen different theories treated in different contexts on different panels. And that is another reminder of how rich the discourse and debates have been during our time here. Let me conclude with one final observation. It is good to think of this conference in the context of other ones that have been organized by SILRAP recently. The historical origins of international criminal law in 2014 that was held here in Delhi stands out, of course. And we have seen the connections between that great conference and this one. There have been many explicit and implicit connections made. Let me also point out that we are in the midst of a trilogy of SILRAP conferences this year. In The Hague in June, we explored preliminary examinations. And if you will, we were dealing with how the machinery of ICL works. Here we have been talking about, again, if you will, the ghost in the machine. And in October, SILRAP will look at who operates the machine with the Conference on Power and International Justice. What an amazing opportunity to understand and develop this discipline of ICL. I feel privileged to have been part of that here and in June, and I look forward to the proceedings in October. Let me conclude by thanking all of you for your contributions here and to SILRAP and the Indian Law Institute and all the other sponsors for your efforts and for the wonderful hospitality. And let me try to say in Hindi, and even if my pronunciation is bad, dhanyavaad. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. For more open access audio recordings, films, and publications, go to silrap.org.